Why, you may be wondering, do we have teddy bears on retreat? Well, you know, sometimes when you're meditating, it all just seems a little bit too much. And you're sitting there and you're like, oh, I can't sit for one moment longer. You're like, oh, is the hour up yet? Oh, it's only 3 minutes. Oh, felt like an hour. And when those moments come, then you can just open your eyes and you can look at Teddy. And Teddy's sitting there very, very peacefully. From the beginning of the retreat right through to the end of the retreat. Why, you should ask yourself, why does Teddy sit there so peacefully? No? It's because Teddy doesn't have any issues. So if you are able to let go of all your issues as effectively as Teddy does, then you'll have a wonderful retreat as well. Okay, so very good to see everybody here. Thank you so much to Bianca and Dania and all the others who have organized and put this retreat together. And of course to the BSWA for providing the wonderful venue that we have here. So we all have the chance to come here for 2 days on this retreat. It's not long enough. So we'll have to see what we can do, see how far we go. Now, before we get started, I want to know how many people, has everyone here meditated before? Is anyone here new to meditation? No, everyone's meditated before at least a bit, and that's good. Is anyone, this is their first retreat? Oh, lots of people, their first retreat. Wow. Okay, well, that's interesting, because normally what I do is normally I arrange to have a meeting with the people who are doing their first retreat. And have a bit of a chat with them, but there's so many, maybe we'll just do that now anyway. So first retreat. So is it scary? It's a bit scary, is it? So it should be. Do you want me to sit here and tell you that everything's going to be okay? It's not. If everything was going to be okay, why would you have to bother doing meditation in the first place? Everything is most decidedly not going to be okay. Okay? The world is crashing down around us. We're all going to die. Yes, that's true. But even though everything is definitely not going to be okay, at the very least we have something we can do about it. We know that everything is uncertain. We know that the problems in life can be overwhelming, confusing. And we know that for many, many, many people in this world, their responses to those things are not very skillful. Right? I mean, everybody knows that the world is difficult, that life is hard, but how do we respond to it, right? So, you know, a lot of people respond to it by getting drunk or by taking drugs or by whatever, or you get involved in, you know, you fall into despair or depression or anxiety or something like that. Or maybe you start looking. You look for some kind of way to get out, you know, and there's so many different strange and weird and wonderful cults and things are out there that you can get involved in. So what we're going to do here is going to be something that's quite different. First thing, lay the ground rules of the relationship that we're going to have here. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Okay? So I don't want to hear any questions of the form, can I? Okay? I'm not here to tell you what you can and can't do. Okay? Yeah. It's very interesting if you look at the Buddha's teaching, how he phrases things. Very rarely would he use that kind of phrasing. Usually he used the phrasing, if this happens, that happens. If you do this, well, that's likely to happen. If you do the other, that's likely to happen. So don't think in terms of, can I do this? What's the right way? What's the wrong way? That's not the point. The point is to say, if I do this, what is going to be the result? Okay? So my job here as a teacher on the retreat is not to tell you what you can and can't do or what's the right and wrong way to practice or anything like that. My job is to try to get you to help you to look and understand more clearly how what you do, your choices, how those things actually affect your mind and affect your state of being. That's what we're going to learn through our meditation. And so we learn that there are ways of living, ways of being, ways of doing things that tend to lead to harm. Right? If we act out of greed, we act out of selfishness, we act out of jealousy, we act out of spite and vengeance and all of these things, then we end up creating harm for ourselves and others. Right? And normally, when we do those things, why do we do them? Why do people do this? If it causes harm, right? Well, no sensible person would do something that causes harm for themselves or others. Why do we do that, even though it causes harm? Well, we do that because the mind is clouded, because the links between things are not clear. Yeah. And so we kind of know somehow that these patterns are there, but it's not really clear enough to us. So when we're sitting in meditation, we clarify our mind. So the purpose of meditation is not to kind of attain anything, or not to be anybody or anything like that. The point is to clarify your mind so that you can see and understand things better. And when we can understand things better, they're a bit less confusing, and a bit less threatening, a bit less fearful. So our purpose is to be still, to practice, to watch, to learn, to know. Yeah? That's what we're here to do. Now the truth that comes from that is your truth. Okay? It's not my truth. The way that you're going to meditate to find peace is your way. It's not my way. I gave up on this illusion many years ago when I first started teaching meditation. I had this meditation method and I used to teach it and I tell people this is what you should do. And then I started to hear from people in interviews and discussions and things what they were actually doing in meditation. I thought, I'm going to not bother anymore. Because not only did not most people not actually do what I was saying, they probably shouldn't have been doing what I was saying, you know, in many cases. Because what they were doing seemed to be perfectly fine and seemed to be working okay. So I'm going to be giving some teachings on meditation and so on over the weekend, but I just want you to understand these are just sharing some guidelines and suggestions for you. That's all. That's all. All a meditation technique is a set of tips and handy hints which have kind of grown over the years through the experience of different meditators. That's all. It's not a kind of prescription that you have to follow. And there's not like one right way or one wrong way. You know, and people sometimes say to me, well, you know, you said this way, Ajahn Brahm said that way, so-and-so said that way, which, you know, what do I do? Well, how would I know? I'm not Ajahn Brahm. I don't know what happens in his meditation. So I only know what happens in my meditation. So I can try to share that with you. If you wanted to practice what somebody else says, if it's different, great, practice it. See what happens in your meditation. Yeah. So just remember that. If you want to get the most out of this retreat, then remember that it's about trying to look into your mind and find your truth. Where is your suffering coming from? Where is your letting go happening? Where is your holding on happening? So I might just give a few, a bit of a practical introduction to what happens on retreats, just so that people won't be too kind of freaked out or think that it's very too weird. Because, well, it is a bit weird, isn't it? I think it's a bit weird what we do on retreats. You know, we're sort of living our busy lives and we're going around doing all of these kinds of things and shopping and working and Facebooking and all of these things. And then we come here on retreat and we think our idea of a good time is to sit in a room with a bunch of strangers and not say anything to them. It's very weird. You're all strange people. If you weren't strange people, you wouldn't be here. Normal people are down at the pub tonight. So that's all right. It's okay to be strange. Says he, wearing this robe. So one thing which is, you know, sometimes can be a bit weird and so on when you come, because we're not used to that. So it's a bit alienating, you know, if you're with people and no one's talking or anything like that. And of course, we all know that there are, you know, there's different kinds of silence. Yeah, there's the bitter silence, right? Which is when something really needs to be said, and no one's game to say it. So remember that on a retreat, that's not the kind of silence that we're practicing. Eh? So it's a loving silence, and the silence that you practice is not primarily for your own sake. Okay, you of course you can keep silence on the retreat, you know, to assist your meditation if you want, and that may be useful, it may be not useful. But the real reason for doing that is as a gift for others. Okay, now practicing silence on a meditation retreat is really just a hack. It's not the way things should be done properly. The real way things should be done on retreat is that we only speak when we have words of wisdom that are going to be really useful. Right, that's the Eightfold Path. Yeah, that's what we should actually be doing. And the only reason why we don't do that is because it's a little bit ambitious sometimes on a retreat. And that's a long-term practice for us to develop. So we take like a bit of a holiday from that practice of developing right speech, just to be quiet for a couple of days. Yeah? So we can just be silent and we can give that gift of quiet to others. Now, this is the most important thing. The silence is not for you, it's for everybody else. So when you come into the room, offer that to people. Yeah? When you walk into the meditation hall, then give your gift of silence to everybody in the meditation hall, in the Dharma hall, in the eating hall, in the cottages. And especially not just with the silence with the speaking, but also with how you're moving. Right? So one of the most important practices we can do on the retreat, which is really hard to do when you're outside of retreat time, is a practice of just being slowing down and being mindful in all your postures and all your movements. Okay? So when you sit meditation, when you finish sitting meditation, you want to get up, then that's not the end of your practice. It's a shift from one way of practicing to another way of practicing. Okay? So before you get up, you remind yourself, okay, I'm going to stand up now. Don't lose your mindfulness. And stand up carefully, aware of your bodily posture as you're standing up, and being quiet about it. Again, think of all the other people in the room and offer that quiet as a gift for them. Remember that when we're sitting in meditation, even the tiniest sound becomes amplified. Right? I'm sure you've all experienced this. Right? Meditation is a great way of, like, if you've got like a watch or something that's missing, then meditation is a really good way of finding it. You sit down in the room, and then after a couple of minutes, you can hear it. So if you're opening a drinking water bottle or shuffling or getting something out of your bag or something like that, everybody in the room can hear you all the time. Okay? Don't be any doubt about that. Right? So everybody can hear you all the time. Right? So it's not a matter of being paranoid. We understand that people sometimes have to make some noises, right? But we just do our best to be quiet and careful with everything that we're doing. When we're walking out, try to make each step as quiet as we can. When we're opening and closing the doors, we make that as quiet as we can. And so that becomes not just a practice for us to help each other with our meditation, but it also becomes a way that we can keep that gentleness and that mindfulness from one meditation to the next. Okay, so that it's not just about the periods when you're sitting on the meditation, but it's about everything that we're doing. Right? So of course, you can't do this kind of practice outside of a meditation retreat, right? There's too many demands, too many things happening. So really make that a focus for this retreat. And when you go, and the Buddha said to be quiet, to be mindful when you're walking in and walking out, when you're moving your limbs, to be mindful where you're looking, right? And in each direction that you look, be mindful of that. And also to be mindful while you're eating. Yeah? So while you're eating, while you're drinking a cup of tea or a glass of water, just be mindful. Pay attention to the food or whatever that you're eating. Reflect with gratitude for the food that you're given. And pay attention to the taste of the food as you're eating it and so on. And then you pay attention also, the Buddha said, to the outcome of that, which means when you go to the toilet, okay? This also is part of that process of eating. Yeah? So normally we only like to pay attention to the fun part of eating. But then there's the other side of it as well. Yeah? So we also pay attention to that. It's cause and effect. Yeah? So as far as I'm aware, the Buddhist scriptures are the only world scriptures of any world religion that actually have instructions on how to go to the toilet with mindfulness, which I think is wonderful. This is part of your spiritual practice. Yeah? So everything that you're doing becomes a part of that. It's not divorced from that. Yeah? So just everything on this retreat, slow down, take your time, and try to get into your body as much as you can. Okay? It's quite tempting and quite easy when you come on meditation retreats, because you're sitting, especially when you first come, your mind is caught up with the you know, your worries or concerns or wishes or whatever that you've had for the last few days, or the problems that are troubling you or something like that. And it's very normal that your mind will run over those things. The more, you know, when you're sitting there in meditation, the mind will go over those. So that's natural, that will happen. So don't worry about it. It's not a problem. But your best way of helping you to ground yourself in the present and not get too caught up in those things is to keep coming back to a physical mindfulness, awareness of your body, awareness of physical sensations. Okay? So just touch things. When you open the door, you just touch the door handle and feel what it's like. When you walk, you feel what it's like to step. Yeah? When you sit, you feel what it's like to feel your body when you're sitting. Yeah? Usually we don't really know where our body is. A wonderful line from James Joyce, he said that Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And that really captures where a lot of us spend most of our time. Yeah? So try and get back into your body. Try to actually feel what those things are like. Yeah? Also, while you're here, you know, take the opportunity. You're in a beautiful natural environment, so take the opportunity to go for a walk in the bush. If the rain lets up a little bit. And just sort of smell things, you know, go out into the bush and just stand there with your eyes closed and smell. What is it like? You know, look at the trees, look at the flowers, the life that's all around you. Yeah? Again, this is a wonderful way of connecting and getting back to those things which are really kind of important and tend to make us whole. You know, being part of nature makes us whole, right? Whereas very often our kind of urban life tends to fracture us, pulls us apart. So don't feel that you have to sort of force yourself to be meditating all the time. And the meditation space is here for you to use. The times on the schedules are there to give you a framework, okay? Nobody's going to be chasing you down if you don't show up for a meditation sitting, okay? If you don't make it for a meditation session, you'll be in your room going, oh, I feel so guilty, oh, that's so bad. And just to give you that little hint, nobody else will notice or care, all right? So just come if you want to meditate. If you don't want to meditate, don't come, okay? Simple as that. Yeah? You don't have to have an excuse. Right? Why should you be? We're not here to force you to do something you don't want to. Obviously, if you want to get the best out of the weekend, then you'll put the effort in to come and meditate as much as you like, as much as you can. But if you don't want to, if you feel too frustrated or too tired or whatever, that's okay. Don't feel guilty about it. Just relax and have a nice time. Okay. So we're just here to give you that opportunity. That's all. All right. Success in meditation doesn't come from, you know, putting in X number of hours on the meditation cushion or anything like that. Success in meditation comes from letting go. It's a wonderful phrase the Buddha used to talk about meditation. Well, sagaramanam karitva labhati samadhin labhati cittase kagatam. It's based on letting go, well, sagga, that one gains unification and peace of mind. So the purpose of being here, the purpose to be sharing this time on the retreat and practicing the Dhamma together, is to be able to let go, to find peace, to find happiness, and to develop all of those good qualities. So we just do our best, come along. If you want to come and sit here for the sessions, that's fine. If you prefer to stay in your room and meditate, that's fine. If you want to go off and have a walk in the forest and so on, that's fine. And so the only thing we really ask you to do is just, you know, keep the basic rules and so on that Bianca's already explained, and to just respect the silence and the practice of others, that's all. And apart from that, then you're most welcome to practice as you wish. Also, I should mention that you're most welcome to keep on practicing whatever meditation technique that you might be used to. And I'm going to be teaching some loving kindness meditation a little bit later, and you know, that's like an invitation for you to practice that way. But if you're happy with how you're meditating and you want to keep doing that, that's fine. Okay, whatever kind of meditation you're doing is fine. Once more, remember, we're not here to tell you what to do. We're here to give you the space where you can find out for yourself, right, how you can be able to let go of what's causing you suffering. Right? So it's about developing wisdom. It's not about doing the right method or the wrong method. Okay, so generally speaking, as a good guideline for meditation, it's good to alternate with walking meditation and sitting meditation. And even though often we don't emphasize on walking meditation all that much, it's one of the main practices that is done all throughout the Buddhist world. So the Buddha said that we should be mindful through all of the four postures, walking, standing, sitting and lying down. And so of those four postures, lying down is good, except a little bit too good sometimes. So it's a bit hard to meditate in unless you've got really strong mindfulness. Standing can be a good posture for meditation, but it's a bit hard to sort of stand still for long periods. It's not very pleasant. sitting is good for deep meditation. And when you do sitting meditation, your mind can become very peaceful and can go a lot deeper. But it can also be quite uncomfortable. Our bodies aren't usually used to sitting still without moving for long periods of time. But walking is often perhaps one of the most pleasant and most comfortable postures that we can have. Right? I mean, people, if you're feeling stressed or feeling whatever, tense or something like that, then people go for a walk just to relax. Yeah? And there's something, I think, very natural about the posture of walking. I think perhaps it's an evolutionary thing. We kind of evolved in a kind of a hunter-gatherer lifestyle where you're pretty much kind of walking during the day. Yeah? That's the main posture that you'd be doing. And so I think just walking itself has a kind of sort of soothing quality that it brings to your body and to your mind. And you see, here we have the walking meditation halls on either side, and of course there's plenty of space outside as well to be doing walking meditation, so that's a great opportunity. Doing walking meditation is not just it's not just a kind of a spiritual or Buddhist thing, but even at the Google headquarters they now have a walking meditation hall. So at the Googleplex in California, you can do walking meditation. So they don't do it because they're Buddhists or because they're interested in people getting enlightened, right? They do it because it works. Yeah? Because when people do walking meditation, their minds become clear, they become relaxed, and they write better code. So if you're a programmer and you want to write better code, the walking meditation is good. So for the to do walking meditation well, there's a few basic principles that we should bear in mind, and I'll give you a bit of a demonstration on how to do walking meditation.
Okay, so first principle is that we should have a defined path to use for the walking meditation. Okay, so walking meditation is a bit different than going for a walk. Of course, if you want to go for a walk, that's fine. But walking meditation, we have a defined path, right? Why do we have a defined path? Well, it's so that we can stop, right? Because our mind tends to go, and it goes and goes and goes and goes. Actually, my father told me a story many years ago. He was a management consultant. He was called out to do a job on a mine in somewhere in the middle of the West Australian desert. It was called Mount something, something, something. I remember. And he gets out there, they flew him out there because people were going slowly crazy at this place. And he was sent out there to find out why people were going crazy and try to stop it. And so he gets out to the mount, whatever it is, and they're sitting around in the evening having a beer or something, and he said, you know, where's the mountain? It's like everything's completely flat everywhere. He says, where's the mountain? The guy says, you're sitting on it. And that was the evening's conversation. And he's talking to people about their lives there and what they did. And one of the fellows said, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but one of the things that just bothers me, he says, I go for a jog in the evenings. I jog out from the mine, I just jog out to the desert, and I don't know where to turn around. There's not a tree or a rock or anything that I can actually stop at and turn around and come back at. So I just jog out into the desert, and I don't know when I should come back. Okay. And that's psychologically, that's very interesting. I had a similar experience once when I was driving across Australia. I was driving with my girlfriend across the desert, and we're like, it's getting late at night, we thought, oh, we should pull over and just have a rest. And then, okay, let's pull over and have a rest. We're driving. And we couldn't pull, there wasn't anything to pull over next to. Right? We're like a shrub or a bend in the road or something like, you know, like a large pothole or something would have done. But there was nothing to actually pull over, so we just kind of kept going. I think there's something in our mind that we're so comfortable with kind of limits. Yeah? I think like little babies, you know, they like to be kind of swaddled and kept close and kept safe. So there's something nice about just having a limit, and we can kind of do that. The path should be like clear and flat, and we shouldn't be tripping over rocks or anything like that. generally speaking, a walking meditation path should be about, traditionally they say about 20 paces, so you'll see how long the paths are in here. Talk to you about that. One time when I was in Thailand, I was staying in a house in the forest, and they built a walking meditation path for me, and when it was finished, I walked down the path, counting the number of paces that was. And one of the workers who was there said, "Oh, how many paces is that?" And I said, "Oh, it was like 35 paces." He said, "Oh, okay." So anyway, I didn't think anything else of it. And then a few weeks later, I heard the story that the owner of that hut told me that worker had come to him the other day. He met that worker the other day, and that he said to him, "You know that Western monk you've got staying at that hut? He's like he gives really good lottery numbers." He said, "What do you mean?" I asked him about the steps on the path. He said 35. So I went to see my family and said, "Look, we've got to buy another 35 lottery ticket." And none of them believed me, but I bought it and I won. So anyway, so generally speaking, about 20 paces or so. They say that the length of your path should be dependent on how your mind is at the time. If your mind's really thinking a lot, if your mind's really restless and active, then you should have a shorter meditation path so you can keep the mind more contained. On the other hand, if you're feeling very lethargic and tired and your mind's kind of dull and depressed, then you should have a longer meditation or longer walking path. Anyway, I'll leave that up to you. So, we stand at one end. Usually we stand with our arms folded in front like that. Sometimes when you're doing a lot of sitting, you get like a pain in your arms or your shoulders. So if that's a bit painful, then you can put your hands behind your back. But generally put your hands in front and stand there. And the first thing we do is just be aware of our posture. So just keep your mind inside your body and just be aware of that posture when you're standing. Now, walking is just a posture, right? So just like when you're doing sitting meditation, you can do various different kinds of meditation. The same thing when you're walking. You can do any kind of meditation while you're walking, right? But what I'm going to show you now is the simplest kind. This is the kind that I always keep on coming back to, and that's simply being aware of the posture of walking. But if you want to do like metta meditation or breath meditation or something else while walking, that's also fine. So here we are standing. And so just say to oneself, standing, standing, standing. And when you feel the mind's clear and you're mindful, then just begin walking. Standing, standing, standing. So if you just say the words to yourself, that helps you to focus a little bit. And so you try and walk so that you're aware of each step. You can feel the moment when your foot touches the ground. Yeah? And you just have some feeling of that process of walking. But don't be too unnatural about it, okay? So there are some kinds of walking meditation where you're like, you know, really kind of super slowly like that. So, it's not necessary to do that. Generally speaking, if you walk at just a normal pace or a little bit slower than normal pace, it doesn't have to be anything. And also be mindful while you're turning around, yeah? So when you reach the end. Any questions about walking meditation process? Okay, very good. So, yeah, as I said before, yeah, Danny. Yeah, I'm just coming.
as I mentioned before, it's good to alternate with the walking and sitting. And sometimes, you know, walking meditation is a very good kind of, it's good balance for things. Like if you're too tired, then sometimes walking can wake you up. On the other hand, if you're too restless and energetic, then walking can calm you down. Yeah. So if you're in any kind of extreme state, and you feel that the sitting meditation is too intense, then doing some walking meditation can be good to even things out and to smooth them out a little bit. But it's as a general rule, it's good to alternate with walking and sitting, doing roughly equal amounts of time of each. If anything, I would recommend and practice to do more walking meditation, especially in the beginning parts of a retreat, even though this is a bit too short to do that. But usually when I'm on retreat, what I do is I begin by doing as much walking meditation as I can. And then as my mind becomes sort of settles into the retreat, and gradually sit for longer and longer periods. So try to do the walking meditation until you feel like your mind is ready to sit. Yeah? You'll get a sense for how that is as time goes on. But until you walk until your mind, okay, my mind feels reasonably clear, reasonably good, my energy's good, and then you come and sit. And that way that you can have much more productive and much more fun sitting meditation. Okay. So, no questions about walking meditation before we go on? Yeah, go on.
How can we do the walking meditation and also at the same time we focus on the breathing?
Isn't it quite hard to focus? Yeah. Well, how do you manage to sit and focus on your breathing as well? Yeah, don't worry about it. If you just walk and breathe, yeah, it's part of the same process. It's part of your body, yeah. So obviously you can't get so focused on your breath as you do in the sitting meditation, right? So in your sitting meditation, you can really go completely into it and completely lose any sense of your body. But in the walking meditation, you won't go so deep into the concentration, so it won't really be an issue. Yeah. So you just walk and breathe and just be peaceful. Yeah. So typically, even though in the walking meditation, your mind won't go so deep into the meditation, but it's more resilient, yeah. So that the peace of mind that you gain through the walking meditation tends to last throughout the day and tends to be more stable and more you can more integrate it into the other activities and things that you do. Yeah? So it's a bit noisy with the rain. Can you still hear me? Okay. Yes. No. Yes. Seems to be some equivocation, but anyway. Okay. Well, we will proceed. Okay. So that's walking meditation. Okay. So let's move on to the sitting meditation and how we're going to do that now for this evening. I won't discuss doing the metta meditation, loving kindness meditation. I'll talk about that starting from tomorrow. So for now, I'm just going to talk about doing mindfulness meditation, and in a few minutes we might do a guided mindfulness meditation together. Is that a good idea? Yeah, we'll do a guided meditation together. Okay, so when I mean a mindfulness meditation, that's a bit misleading actually, because any meditation should hopefully be a mindfulness meditation. But what I mean is just mindful awareness of anything that's happening. And this is a basic meditation practice which really should be part of your repertoire as a meditator, no matter what kind of meditation you're doing. So, just to introduce this practice, I'm going to just talk a little bit about some of the qualities of mind that we're trying to develop through the meditation. So first of all, the quality of mindfulness, and what does mindfulness actually mean? So this is actually quite a profound topic. I can't discuss it too much here. But essentially, the point about mindfulness is that mindfulness means a continuity of awareness. Okay? Mindfulness is about sustaining your awareness, sustaining awareness in the present. Okay? So notice that I don't say in the present moment. Okay? Now, I don't like the present moment. I have issues with the present moment, and I try to avoid it when I can. Why? Because the present moment is just too tight. It's too harsh. The present, what's a present? Present is what you get on your birthday. Right? The present is a gift. Yeah? That's what the present is. So when we're trying to be in the present moment, moment is something really small and tiny. So we're trying to squeeze ourselves, squeeze our awareness into something really tiny. And that's quite hard. Because you're quite big. And you're trying to squeeze yourself into something that small. Something's got to give. Whereas the present is very easy. How hard is it to get up on your birthday and be given presents? It's very easy. Someone says, here's your present, and you go, oh, that's lovely. Yeah? That's how easy meditation is. The present is just given to you. Okay? You don't have to go chasing it. You don't have to hunt it down, right? That's all there is. And this is one of the great insights that we get through meditation, is that the present is actually all there is. It's all there ever has been and all that there will be. There's no such thing as the past and the future. These are just ideas that we concoct in order to help us to make sense of the world and so that we can catch the bus tomorrow morning, right? That's why we have a future, right? So we know what time the bus is coming or what time we're going to have breakfast. Right? But it's not actually real. By the time the bus comes in the present. We have breakfast in the present. Our entire life happens in the present. That's all there ever has been and all there ever will be. So the idea that, you know, when we're in meditation, we don't sort of try to be in the present. We are already in the present. We've never been anywhere else. But we're just a bit mixed up in our heads about it. We think that we're in the past and the future. So it's not about not being in the past and the future. It's about not being confused about what the past and the future really are. So the present is a gift. And the difference between this is something that was first articulated by the great Buddhist philosopher David Kalapahana, who talks about this, and he pointed out that in the Buddhist teachings, in the early Buddhist texts, we don't find any term meaning the present moment. Okay, so the idea of the present moment is something that only came about much later in Buddhist history. The Buddha only talked about the present, and he described the difference very memorably. I think he said the present moment is like a tightrope, and the present is like a camel. Right? So if you're trying to meditate and be in the present moment, it's like you're walking on a tightrope. You're sort of, oh, you never know if you're going to... Whereas in the present, it's like riding on a camel. You know, it's a bit, you can wiggle around a little bit on it, you know, it's kind of a bit loopy and sort of bouncy and stuff like that. And it's a bit kind of robust. It's a bit hard to fall off a camel. Well, sorry, I imagine anyway, I've never actually been on one. There's a bit of breadth to it. Hmm? So we be present. Hmm? And this is one of the foundational aspects of meditation. How do we do this? How do we stop the illusion that we actually are in the past and the future? Well, the most practical way of doing this is what I was referring to earlier with the being awareness of of your body, mindfulness of your body, the foundation of all Buddhist meditation, mindfulness of your body, kaya anupassana. Why? Well, think about it. What do you see? Where is what you see? What you see is always in the present. What you see is always here and now. What you hear is always here and now. What you smell, taste and touch is always here and now. Right? It's only in our mind that we go to the there and then. Right? So it's our mind consciousness which takes us out into the there and then. And if we want to return to the here and now, we come back into the five senses. Yeah? So we try to return to the senses. We pay attention as much as we can to what the physical senses are like. Now, normally, in our world, you think about how our world goes, right? Let's say we meet somebody and we talk to them. I'm talking to, and I come here and we talk to Bianca and I said, how's the retreat going? And we talked. But actually, there's no Bianca that I'm talking to. This is an illusion. Actually, there's just what I see is colours. Right? What the eye sees is just colours, it's just light. You don't see a person. What I hear is just sound. Right? And so the idea that I'm talking to Bianca is an idea in my mind. And I've connected these sights and sounds with other sights and sounds in the past, and I've made a concept, an idea that in my mind is called Bianca. And that's who I've had a conversation with. Right? This is how we understand the psychology of the human mind in Buddhism. So if we want to understand our mind, we want to look more closely at what this world is made up of and how it works, we begin by, rather than getting caught up in these stories about this person, that person, she did this, he did that, I want this, I don't want that, all of those kinds of narratives, then we step back from the narratives and we come back into the direct experience, like the raw experience. What is it like to see something? Not even something. We can even take something off that sentence. What is it like to see? What is it like to hear? Not to hear a bird or a person or a kangaroo or something. What is it like just to experience the sense of hearing? What is it like to smell? And as we come into these senses and experience them, we begin to see them as if for the first time. And we begin to experience them, the difference between them. That all of these things are quite distinct kinds of experience. And so we build up our world, the world that we live in, from assimilating and interpreting and putting together all these different kinds of experience. So when we come to meditation, we try to step back from that and come back into what's the raw experience like. What is it like? What is sitting here like? What does my body feel like? What do the clothes feel like on my body? And we pay attention to these sensations. We don't try to interpret them. We don't try to make sense of them. We just know them. We just pay attention to them. And whatever it is that we're experiencing, it's okay. And so this is one of the aspects that I wanted to emphasize here is that we're about getting into touch with the raw experience. But the second thing I want to emphasize here is about the role of equanimity. Right? Now at this stage, what we're doing in the meditation, we're practicing with equanimity. That means that neither favoring nor opposing. Okay? But equanimity doesn't mean not caring. Okay? Equanimity, in fact, means, where we translate as equanimity is a Pali word, which in Pali is upekkha, and upekkha literally means watching closely. Yeah, upa ikha, to watch closely. So upekkha doesn't mean to disregard something, or equanimity doesn't mean to disregard something and not care about it. It means to watch over closely, but without interfering. And so if you can put it in the context of a court case, you say, well, you want a judge. We can think of the difference between being disinterested and uninterested, right? So we want a judge to be disinterested, but not uninterested. Right? Can you see the difference there? So uninterested means that the judge doesn't care what's happening and is falling asleep while everybody's giving their evidence. Right? And that's not a very good judge. Right? On the other hand, we want the judge to be disinterested in the sense that he's not favouring and opposing, he's not taking sides in the dispute. So the judge is listening to everything fairly. Right? That's the kind of mind state that we want. So it's a kind of mind that hovers, that just hovers over experience and watches what's happening without getting too involved in it. Okay? The ability to step back from our own worlds, our own issues, our own narratives, and just see them for what they are. Oh, okay, that's all right. I feel like that. It's okay. It's just a feeling. Yeah? I'm thinking like that. That's okay. It's just a thought. My body's feeling like that. That's okay. It's just a body. And so we look at these things, we can accept them, we can watch them, we can see them, without making too much of a fuss about it. This is this development of equanimity or upekkha, which is really fundamental in our meditation. To be able to watch without getting caught up in things. Another quality which we're going to have to develop in our meditation is a quality that we call kanti, or patience. Actually, we often translate kanti as patience, but the better translation would be acceptance. Right? Why do we need to have that acceptance? Well, because you're going to suffer. Simple as that. You're going to have sore knees or a sore bum. You're going to feel restless. You're going to feel anxious. You know all that stuff we tell you in the introduction to meditation, all that peace and happiness stuff? Yeah, well, this is the reality. That's the spin, okay? That's the marketing, peace and happiness, with some butterflies and stuff, isn't it wonderful? But face it, you know, if it was all just peace and happiness and butterflies, it'd get boring after a little while anyway, so. Actually, meditation is much more real than that, and it includes everything in human experience. Just think about that for a moment. In your meditation, right, anything that a human being can experience, you can experience in your meditation, and if you keep at it for long enough, you probably will. Right? Grief, joy, despair, excitement, thrill. So many things, and many feelings for which we have no name. Feelings and experiences which are so rare and unique that they fall outside of language. And you will have those as well. One of those experiences will be boredom. Sitting there, nothing's happening. Yeah, on and on and on, I'm wasting my time, this is going on, boredom, boredom. That's just an experience, just be patient. Restlessness, yeah, sometimes you'll be there, and you'll be like, well, what's happening on Facebook? I can't say. It's so important. How many likes have I got? Oh, I can't wait to get home and tell everyone how great this meditation retreat was. Right? So there's restlessness. And so you just have to be patient with that. Yeah? Sometimes you'll be like hungry, you'll be meditating in the evening and be thinking, oh, so hungry, you have so long till the next, if only I could have a little snack. Or you'll be sitting there and be really tired. Sometimes you have these energy shifts in your meditation, you know, you might have huge energy will come through, you'll be sitting there bolt upright with this kind of light shooting through you, and you'll be like, can't believe how much energy there is. Other times it's like this incredible lethargy, like you're kind of oppressed by this cloud of darkness that just sort of descends and crushes your spirit. All of those things can happen. And you know what? It's all okay. Right? Think of your meditation as being like a sandbox, like a playground, like a safe place. You go into that space when you come to sit and meditate. Yeah? And in that space, when you close your eyes, there is no me, no other, there's no man, there's no woman, there's no old, there's no young, there's no black, there's no white, there's no Buddhist or Christian or atheist. Everything is gone. There's no, you're not a career person, you're not a mother or a child or anything like that. When we close our eyes and look in our meditation, none of those things are there. They just aren't there. That's not a concept. I'm not trying to program you with these things. I'm just pointing out the obvious fact. If you close your eyes and you look into your mind, none of those things are real. And so all of that stuff that we use to define ourselves, to make ourselves an individual, different from everyone else, and all those things we're so attached to, our reputation, our status, our wealth, all of those things, they're all gone. Nothing there. So, just let that all happen within that meditation. Whatever feelings want to come out, just let them come out. If you want to have a cry, have a cry. If you want to laugh, have a laugh. If you want to roll around the floor having fits, then roll around on the floor having fits. I've done that. I've done all of those things. It's okay. And if you see somebody else doing that, then just point at them and laugh and say, "Ha, look at that silly person." No, don't do that. No, I was only kidding. If you see somebody else, you know, and they're crying or something like that's happening, maybe they're sitting in meditation, there's a big goofy grin on their face. I don't know if you've ever seen that. You see, so, and you're like, "Ah, oh, come on, they're not really that happy." Maybe they are. Maybe they really are that happy. Anyway, that's not your problem. Okay, so again, this is something to think about as a safe space. Anything like that can happen, and it's okay. You know, we're sitting in meditation. And I tell you, I go out and do the interviews and I talk to people, and one of the most universal experiences people have on meditation retreats is that they're like, everybody else is so peaceful. And you're sitting there and sometimes you open your eyes and you look around the room and you're thinking, my goodness, there's like 60 people here and they're all so peaceful and I'm the only one who's... And of course, every single one of those other 60 people is thinking the same thing. Okay. So let the meditation be a safe place. And so this is that development of patience. Just accept it. Everything is okay. And then we can leave it behind. When we get up from our meditation seat, then you just remind yourself that experience has happened and now I'm leaving it behind. Alright? And then you get up and you go and do what you have to do. Alright? Okay, so let's do some mindful awareness meditation for the next half an hour. Before we start the meditation, are there any quick questions? Okay. So as we sit here quietly and let mind settle back into the body. Noticing the sounds around us. The distant chirping of the insects. The very soft hum of the PA. Just sounds. And then bring attention to the sensation of taste. What does it taste like in your mouth right now? What about the sensation of touch? Can you feel the touch on the surface of the skin? And what about the touches we feel inside the body? Pressures, tensions, movements of energy. So just scan the mind through the different parts of the body, slowly moving around and just checking out what those different parts feel like. Don't get too involved. Don't stare or try to focus too hard on anything. Just watch, oh, okay, that's what that's like. Accept it. Know it with equanimity. Have patience with it. Sometimes as you're sitting, your mind starts to think about this and that. Playing around, inventing stories, narratives, ideas, images, memories, all these delights that the mind loves to cook up for itself. Sometimes not delights, also sometimes horrors, worries, anxieties, all the things that could be going wrong. We just know those things. Oh, okay. That's what my mind's interested in. That's what I'm thinking about. It's very important not to act like the victim of your own thoughts. Thoughts aren't something that happened to you. They're something that you do. So we begin by accepting them. Oh, okay, that's a thought that I'm thinking. That's an idea that I'm having. That's a memory that I'm recalling. You realize that, you know it, and then you just come back to the silence. Come back to the physical sensations, physical grounding in the body, or else just be aware of the absence of thought, the space in between the thoughts. And so now, coming near the end of the meditation, and before we finish, we take a minute to reflect and review back over the meditation. Inquiring into cause and effect. How was that? How did that meditation feel like? What kinds of things came up? What kinds of things were useful? What was obstructive? How does my mind feel like now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize Nibbana.